So there seems to be this really big diversion between Amazon's public stance and what they're willing to let go in actuality.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Hey, Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing great.
I understand you had a call, a podcast recording with someone that specializes in Amazon businesses on the legal side of it. Is that right?
Yeah. So this is an attorney. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard of him before, AmazonSellerLawyer.com, CJ Rosenbaum. And it was fascinating. I'm going to ask you a question, Joe. What do you think of when you think of an attorney? How do they typically approach most deals?
I always tell my clients that I will not work with them if they have an attorney that is related to them. If mother, brother, father, sister, aunt, uncle, it's like, I'm not in. I'm out, because I've had deals fall apart because relatives fight like rabid dogs. I think, you know, a good contract attorney has to be reasonable and see that it's an equitable deal for both sides and approach it from that aspect. If they don't do that, then things can get pretty emotional and ugly as we get towards signing an asset purchase agreement.
Yeah. And my experience with attorneys is they're often, you know, they're hired to protect their clients from potential liability. They tend to be so risk averse that they can kill deals often, right? Because as a potential buyer of a business, buyers are looking for opportunity. Obviously, you want to protect yourself from risk. You hire that attorney to look out for bad case scenarios or worst case scenarios, seller fraud, or, you know, what am I missing? What are my liabilities here? And so the advice I hear from attorneys almost always is heavily skewed towards risk aversion versus going towards opportunities. And I often advise sellers and buyers to make sure that they understand an attorney is one member of their team, their advisory team. They need to listen to that advice, then they have to evaluate it based off their business goals. CJ completely surprised me right out the gate on this interview. And it actually threw me off a little bit, because he definitely gets the opportunity side and is pushing a lot of his clients towards taking advantage of the opportunities that are prevalent on Amazon. And so in this interview, what you're going to hear, a lot of discussion on the risks, on the pitfalls, of the traps, of the things that can go wrong in Amazon. But when you look at what CJ recommends for his clients, it's really bullish and aggressive. Taking advantage, max advantage of the opportunities that are there. We start out the gate, right out of the gate on this, talking about the difference between acquiring an Amazon business for a stock sale versus doing an asset sale. And Joe, we recommend at Quiet Light Brokerage, we recommend asset sales, right? Typically, right? And I'll have you explain this. Why do we typically recommend asset sales over shareholder sales?
The liabilities do not carry forward. If there's a lawsuit on a stock sale, if I buy a business, anybody that is suing that company, that carries forward to me if it's a stock sale. If I buy the assets of the business, it's a tougher path to carry forward.
Yeah, so exactly. That's a huge issue there. But a lot of people want to do shareholder sales with Amazon because they think that they can transfer that Amazon business without Amazon being aware of it. Now, our approach at Quiet Light has been different. We want Amazon to be aware of it. We want you to get that email from Amazon saying, here's how you transfer your account, because that's going to give you CYA. It's going to cover your tail in the event that something happens down the road. Right. CJ advises his clients the opposite of that. Yeah, right.
Don't tell Amazon, do a stock sale.
He pushes most of his clients towards a stock sale. We talked after the podcast as well. He was surprised that we've had 100% success rate. So I sent him some of our information on it. There's definitely more than one way to really address the Amazon issues.
Yeah, it makes sense. Look, logically, you know, if Martha Stewart Living is selling products, they're going to do a stock sale. Right, if they're going to sell their business, and the Amazon account would go with that. So there's absolutely logic to it. Sounds interesting.
Looking forward to it. Yeah. Again, I think some people are going to be impressed with just how bullish he is on a lot of the stuff here. There was one final plea at the very end, and I'm going to plug it right now before we get into the interview. If you are not using smile.amazon.com to make your purchases, I would highly recommend you set up with this. Smile.amazon.com donates a portion of all of your purchases towards a charity of your choice. I personally use it for a local charity that we support here up in the Twin Cities. But we have a link in our show notes for an institution that CJ is promoting. If you don't know who to promote right now or who to give some of this money to, see this link. It's a worthy cause, and I'll let you listen to the interview to understand more about it. But it doesn't cost you anything to do this. You're going to be helping a charity just from your everyday purchases. So smile.amazon.com, take a look at the show notes, choose a charity for sure.
I like it. Looking forward to listening to the show.
Awesome. All right. Thanks very much for joining me, CJ. How are you?
I'm doing great. Really happy to be on.
Well, thanks for taking the time. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while on the podcast. And so just as you know, obviously we're recording this on video. This is audio and video. So as we're talking, don't say something with your hands and not with your mouth at some point. Most people do listen through audio. We've made a bit of a tradition here to not introduce our guests ourselves, but to let our guests introduce themselves. And so I'm going to throw it over to you. If you could just give the listeners here a little bit of background on who you are and how you got into doing what you do.
Sure. My name is CJ Rosenbaum, the founding attorney of a law firm, Rosenbaum Familaro. I'm blessed with a fantastic partner, Anthony Familaro, and we are the law firm behind AmazonSellersLawyer.com. We are now about 24 people strong, and like 99.9% of what we do is solely for Amazon sellers. I got into this space because a long-term client of mine, I always had to always represent entrepreneurs, you know, is doing trial work and all sorts of other stuff. About 8 or 9 years ago, I was looking at buying an Amazon-based business. And I was involved, and then I wasn't involved, and then I was involved, and then closed on the business, and then he gets suspended. And so I get a phone call that, you know, I've just put hundreds of thousands of dollars into this business, and the account's been suspended. You have to look at this. And at the time, there were only a couple of consultants doing it. Neither one of them had any idea about intellectual property issues. They weren't attorneys. And when I started looking at their writing, their plans of action, they were farming out their writing. And so I thought this was a great place to get into. I love working with entrepreneurs. So fast forward till today, we are the only company out there, we're a law firm, we're the only company out there that writes plans of action that actually has a centralized team in these two conference rooms behind me. We've got a dozen and a half people who do nothing but write plans of action, address IP issues, non-legal issues, as well as legal issues. We are the best because we work together. Nothing gets farmed out. We don't work out of a mailbox at a UPS store. We don't farm things out to people in the Philippines. Everything is written by college-educated Americans right here in beautiful downtown Long Beach, New York.
Awesome. Well, this topic of suspensions is a huge topic, as you know. Obviously, the biggest risk for any Amazon seller is having that rug pulled out from underneath of that platform. So in this conversation, I want to talk about a number of issues. I want to talk about selling an Amazon account, transferring an Amazon account, how to deal with the transfers, how to deal with suspensions, how to get back from suspensions, and then also your opinion on all these things. So a decent amount of ground to cover. I'm going to jump right on into it now and get into the question that we hear all the time from people, especially people within the Amazon world. And that is, can you sell and transfer an Amazon account? Is that okay with Amazon?
Yes. Well, let me take a step back. Is it okay with Amazon? There are two ways of either buying or selling your Amazon-based business, with Amazon's blessing and without. There are no Amazon police out there, okay? So no one's ever going to come knocking at your door, okay, and arrest you because you did something without Jeff Bezos, okay, or outside his plans. It's never going to happen. So the two ways are with their blessing or without. I think almost all, if not all, the transactions that we have participated in have been without Amazon's blessing. And is there some added risk as a buyer? There certainly is. But the flip side of that is if you do with Amazon's blessing, you're generally going to lose all the value that you're trying to buy. You're going to lose your reviews. You're going to lose the buy box. You're going to lose the history that you have because Amazon's going to treat that as a brand new business. So what's the point of buying an ongoing business if you're not going to get all the benefits? So we've done, I don't know how many sales, either for the buyer or for the seller, where you're doing it sort of undercover without Amazon's knowledge. And you are taking an extra risk because if you get caught, you know, you could be out a lot of money or you could have to use other mechanisms in place. But those are the two ways of doing it.
Okay, so let's. I want to get into this a little bit more because we have very specific advice that we give people, and because of the risk of the buyer, we always recommend doing it with Amazon's permission. So I want to get into to this conversation a little bit here, and maybe go back and forth a little bit. I'll tell you what we've told people, and you can tell me I'm wrong or maybe anything else. So what we typically have recommended is that sellers reach out to Amazon in advance, let them know that they're going to be changing the information on their account, that new ownership is coming into to their business, and they need to know how to transfer that, change the account information over. And that's worked, seemed to work well for most of our clients. It sounds like you're seeing something different. Is that the case?
Yeah, we've seen that when they do that, that when they do the transfer, they're losing the benefits. They're losing all the reviews. They're losing the buy box. They're losing all the benefits. I hope you're having a different experience. Listen, Amazon is a very erratic place to do business. Okay. It's like, you know, I've described it, you know, jokingly, okay, semi-jokingly, as doing business on a waterbed floating in the ocean, right? So is there like a right or a wrong way? I don't think so. I think it's all risk versus reward like any other business. That's not how we've been involved in doing it with Amazon's blessings. Most of our buyers want to make sure they preserve it. They don't want the risk of Amazon turning down the deal or turning down the transaction. And sellers are also very leery to ask Amazon about transferring it, because if the deal falls, they have a problem. If they transfer it, they may have a problem. So I guess our experience is more on the other side of the way you guys are generally doing it. Although it's not bad. I mean, if it works, it works. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, our experience so far has been 100% success in transferring over Amazon accounts. And I will admit, I don't follow up with every client, but you know, we've heard plenty of stories of people taking over those accounts and doing well with them. We have had people do the other way though, which is without Amazon's blessing. And for our listeners and people that are looking at this, maybe contemplating it, what does that look like? How do you go about transferring an Amazon account without reaching out to Amazon in advance to switch over all that information?
Well, as a seller, it's absolutely fantastic, okay? Because most of these transactions, you have the buyer buying the shares of the corporation or buying the LLC, which means they're also not only buying the goodwill, they're buying everything. They're buying all the liability. So from a seller's perspective, someone who's willing to buy that corporation's shares, they get their money, they get out, and it couldn't be cleaner as a seller, okay? Now, the flip side of that, when you're a buyer, if you're actually buying the shares of someone else's corporation, you would never do that in any other business, because you wouldn't want to take on the sales tax liability, the product liability, employment claims, unemployment claims, anything under the sun that could happen against that business. I mean, right now, sexual harassment, you know, is a huge, huge problem. I mean, it's always been a huge problem, but now it's coming more to fruition. So if you buy the shares of the corporation and there was a manager who was harassing a subordinate, you now own that claim because you own the corporation. You would never do that in any other situation. So as a buyer, we have in our retainer, we have a whole list of a checklist that if you're choosing to do this, you're aware of this potential liability and that liability and workers' comp and harassment and rent and leases, everything you're responsible for. So for a buyer, it's very, very risky, but it allows them to really just step into the shoes without Amazon being aware. And this also works for a lot of sellers who have other accounts and are violating, you know, this craziness of only one Amazon account per human being. It's another way of they can diversify. So are they taking extra risks? They certainly are, but they're also diversifying and certainly protecting the reviews and the buy box and the distribution chains.
Right, right. So this comes down entirely to this risk versus reward sort of calculation. If as a buyer, you are pure reward focused and you just want the maximum upside, risk be damned, you're looking at doing that shareholder acquisition. You're buying 100% of the company. And you touched on a topic, which is another big topic to talk about, sales tax liability in all the different states potentially. The alternative and what we typically would steer people towards would be that asset sale in which the buyer sets up a new co and transfers all of those assets on over. The seller still owns their old corporation and thus they still own that liability in the past as well. That's the basic distinction that we recommend to people, that we tell people. Would you agree that that's a fair assessment?
Absolutely. That's traditionally how one business transfers to another. You set up a brand new company, a brand new corporation, LLC, LLP, whatever it is that your accountant advises you to create, and you buy the assets and you buy the goodwill. We'll also sometimes come with an employment agreement where the seller will agree to stay on board for a certain period of time to make sure that there's continuity and training. But yeah, that is much, much, much safer in terms of avoiding liability. Much safer.
Yeah, yeah. So let me ask a question on that, because I actually have had people require that our sellers sign a something protecting them from liability, right? So somebody sets up a new co, the old co goes defunct, and then, you know, the state of whatever decides that they want to try and collect sales tax. I've had sellers, buyers get worried about that liability passing through to them. Is that something that a buyer should be aware of with liabilities, outstanding liabilities, when they're doing an asset sale where the old co is going to be shut down?
Yeah, I think it's vital. But again, it's risk versus reward. A lot of what you're going to get, you're going to get an indemnity provision from the seller. They're going to agree to indemnify, hold harmless, and defend. You know, pay the attorneys, pay the losses for it. But that agreement really is only as good as you can enforce it, right? You have the greatest indemnity agreement on the planet, but if the guy has no assets or you can't get to his assets, then it's not really worth the paper it's written on. Also, indemnity agreements are really just buying you a ticket to the courthouse, yeah. Right? Right. You have to enforce it, right? You have to most likely take them to court wherever it is that you can get jurisdiction over them. And back to the sales tax issues, even when if you're buying the assets and the assets are inventory and the inventory was in the state of Massachusetts, right? You just bought yourself a state sales tax nexus to the state of Massachusetts.
Right.
So there's all sorts of landmines, but it doesn't mean it's not still great business to buy Amazon accounts or Amazon-based businesses. There's still a tremendous opportunity, tremendous amount of money to be made. I just go into it with your eyes open and make a good business decision, weighing, again, I see everything as risk versus reward, everything. So this is just a factor you need to consider. What is your upside? What is your risk? Seller financing is a little less common when it comes to Amazon-based businesses than brick and mortar. Are you buying accounts? I think the due diligence, you have to look at performance notifications, IP complaints, history, ODR rate, not just current, but going back the 18 months and see what's there. But again, I mean, this Amazon there's a lot of Amazon bashing. They have also provided, I mean, like the greatest opportunity in the history of commerce for your average business person to get in right away with basically a phone and a credit card and start competing with the big boys. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I like to describe it as the gold rush of our era. And I've told the story a few times. I don't know if I've told on this podcast before, but we were at a show last year, Prosper Show. Well, we're going to be there again coming up here in March. And I remember I talked to a couple last year. They came up. They were netting bottom line earnings over $1 million per month with their business. And it was pure Amazon. So we talked to them a little bit about their business. And I told them, I said, you know what? The thing I'm recommending to all Amazon sellers is diversify. Take some time, open up a Shopify store, open up different sales channels. Doesn't have to take over your revenue streams. Just diversify a little bit. And they looked at me kind of with these eyes like, no, we're not going to do that. And he even told me, he said, sounds like a lot of work. I'm like, you're making $1 million a month.
A month.
That's right. Bottom line, just hire somebody to do that. But it is a gold rush. There is, you know, we talk about these landmines all the time. I don't want people to get the wrong impression. There's a lot of money to be made there.
And I agree. This is the modern gold rush, and it's still expanding. It's not like you've missed the boat. You can still get in, and it's expanding exponentially. The amount of opportunities all over the world. I mean, Australia is a huge country, huge population. It just opened up. I mean, it just opened up. And also, we're going to be speaking at Prosper also. There's always things to learn. There's always new markets to get into, new products, new sources. And it allows you with an idea to like bring it to market faster than in the history of commerce.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I want to get your opinion on something. And this is the duplicity between Amazon's terms and their actual actions. So we talk about this all the time to people when we're very public about this. Amazon's terms, or what they say publicly on their site, is they have this really weird phrase when it talks about transferring an Amazon account. It says Amazon accounts are generally, and they put generally in these square brackets, generally not transferable. And then it says, if somebody's buying your business, they should set up a new account. And then, like you said, you're going to lose all that history. Now, our experience, as I told you, is that we have recommended to people to call their Amazon Seller Central, call the Amazon directly, ask them about the transfer. Usually you get somebody who doesn't know anything about what's going on. And then you call again, and then you call again. And eventually you find someone that says, yeah, all you have to do is this, 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 and this. and everything transfers without a problem. We've even had Amazon Legal give permission to a transfer before. So there seems to be this really big diversion between Amazon's public stance and what they're willing to let go in actuality. You work with them a lot more than I do. Where does this sort of duplicity from action and stance seem to come from? And this is an unfair question, totally just opinion and conjecture.
We see that in like every aspect of doing business on Amazon. Every aspect, from the basic inauthentic suspension, right? Where you have to give them your invoices. And I've now cross-examined Amazon's person on this issue, like, I don't know, half a dozen times or so, maybe a little bit less. All the way to the transfer accounts, to shipping goods. It's very erratic. One of the great things that Amazon does for its employees is gives them the ability to make decisions for themselves. They really encourage self-thought, right? And I think that's great. On the flip side of that is that then all the decisions are fairly erratic in nature, because the guy sitting at one desk, you're reading your email in Hyderabad or Bangalore, right? Decides that your fact pattern says, no, this is no good. And the woman sitting next to him, the same exact fact pattern, says, that's great. And this happens in like every aspect of doing business with them. So the public persona that is generally, it's kind of obscene. Most sellers don't know this. The terms of service is not your contract with Amazon, okay? It's in something called the business solutions agreement, which if you click through the definitions, you can find it, okay? But most sellers don't even know their contract exists with Amazon, right? So what it does there is actually under Amazon, who wrote the contract, means it's interpreted against them. It's under Washington law, state of Washington. It makes all of the sellers independent contractors. In big, bold, capitalized letters, you're an independent contractor. And on the law of Washington state, that generally, I'm not a Washington lawyer, that generally means that they can't terminate you at will if you're fulfilling your end of the deal, right? So that this generally would be interpreted against Amazon. They can't terminate you're an independent contractor, but it's kind of like this legal, you know, kind of craziness that you can buy the right to be an independent contractor with this other private entity. That doesn't really make any sense. You know, in Yiddish, there's the word mishigas, craziness.
Right.
And
right.
This comes through on everything you can't resolve amicably with them. So the persona that you're not supposed to transfer, yes, but it happens all the time. Are they aware of it? Yes, they are. The language is generally. What does that mean? I don't know. So again, risk versus reward. You know, if you ask Amazon's permission, it may go well, it may go poorly. You know, if you do it without Amazon's blessing, it may go really well or may go poorly. It seems like also there's really no set end game. Like Amazon, let's say they suspend your account. They say, no, you can't have the reviews. You can't do this. You can't do that. You could always then take them to arbitration and have an arbitrator take the decision right out of their hands. And the arbitrator will then decide. But their decisions are kind of erratic also because they don't have to follow precedent and there's no appellate review. So again, we both recognize that there's a great opportunity at Amazon. There are certain landmines and certain things you're just not going to know, but it's still a tremendous opportunity here.
Well, let's talk about account suspensions for a little bit, because last spring, I think it was last spring, they had the big hack of Amazon, right? So for people not familiar with this, some bad actors came in, changed the bank account information on a bunch of accounts and funneled it all over to overseas accounts. Amazon wasn't aware of it right away. Once they found out, they covered most of the costs, from what I understand. They covered most of the lost revenue there on behalf of their sellers. It was shortly after that we at Quiet Light Brokerage came across our first suspension after a transfer. And it was really a security check more than anything else. They saw bank account information change on an account and boom, the account went immediately into this holding. We got to check to see what's going on. And then for a while, every account, we just started telling people, expect that you're going to see your account suspended for just a couple of days while they inspect this, make sure it's on the up and up. As you see this all the time, suspensions can happen for a variety of reasons. What is the first thing somebody should do if they log into that account and find out that they've been suspended? What's the first thing they should do other than not panic, hopefully not panic?
Well, panic does lead to them sending in something off the seat of their pants to respond to it, sometimes in anger, sometimes in a panic mode, sometimes asking for information that Amazon's not going to reveal. So listen, if you lose a great ASIN, if your account gets suspended, take a deep breath, okay? You don't have cancer. You're not going to die. It's going to cost you a few dollars, but take a deep breath and try and figure out the reason why. they'll give you a generic term, inauthentic, ODR rate, feedback, whatever it is. And you, what you need to do is really do an evaluation. Why is there an issue with my account? And once you do that, you may come to the conclusion that it was a scam buyer or someone at Amazon's crazy, the algorithm went nuts and nailed you. But what you can really always identify is a way that you can make your business better. And that's the plans of 40% of what we do has nothing to do with the law. It's writing plans of action. And we always phrase things, how a seller can be better. How, even though you didn't cause that problem, how can you avoid it in the future? How can you redo your listings that the perception of what the consumer is going to receive better matches the box that shows up at their door? And that's what we do over and over and over again. And that's what I think a seller needs to do. Take a step back, take a deep breath, and say, okay, how can I get better? And that's what you want to submit to Amazon. And that first plan of action that you submit is really your best chance of getting reinstated quickly. Because once, if that is either denied or they ask for information, you're kind of in a cycle. So we bust our tail to make sure that first plan of action that we give a seller to submit is the best it can be. Best, inclusive, concise, persuasive. I don't think you should ever, I mean, this is another thing. Never admit you did something wrong unless you really did and you are 110% certain Amazon knows about it. The reason why is that if your plan of action gets denied and your policy team escalation gets denied and your Bezos escalation gets denied, you want to be able to go to arbitration. But if you go in front of an arbitration and the first thing you wrote says, we're really sorry, we shipped something with a cracked screen, you're done. So I know a lot of the consultants out there will recommend you fall on the sword if you didn't do anything wrong. Terrible advice. The reason they do that is because they can't help a seller go to arbitration. They're not attorneys. They have no responsibility. They don't have the authority to actually represent another business or another person. But don't admit to doing something wrong with the hope that it's going to take responsibility to get back on. So take a deep breath, really do an analysis, and don't admit to doing something wrong. Phrase it differently. Phrase it as how you're going to be better.
Yeah, I think something that you said there is super important for people to get across. I've been public that I'm bearish in many ways on Amazon because of the risks involved. I've also talked about it as a gold rush, though. And you said something in there that stood out to me. And I think people have to keep this in mind. Amazon is in this to make money. And so they're not going to just randomly be shutting down accounts that are making them money unless there's a reason for it. Their formula for making money is having the greatest product selection, having great prices, and having a great customer experience. So you said something in there, which is the suspensions, the plans of action, typically make a business better after you actually implement those. I think that's a really good perspective for people to have when they're worried about the big bad Amazon coming in and randomly shutting them down, that there is a customer-driven reason behind a lot of these shutdowns, which are going to help you in the long run.
And you could always get better. I mean, every day we look at ourselves here and how can we get back to clients faster? How can we get the plans of action at a quality but out faster to get people reinstated faster? How do we improve our relationships with the lawyers that represent Amazon and Warner Brothers and Disney and all these other companies? And we really focus on every business, every seller. And what's odd is that the level of expertise for retailers is insanely good on Amazon. You have to be, you're getting kicked off. You know, you go to the brick and mortar store, they have 20% returns. They have loss factors, right? You can't have that on Amazon. So the level of savviness is incredible for sellers across the board, but there's always something you can improve. And if you focus on that, it makes the plan of action easier to write. It makes you a better business person. And yeah, it does. Ultimately, it makes you more money.
Yeah, I talked to one seller who we were talking about some of the new changes Amazon was making. This was a few years ago. They're making changes which made it more difficult to do business. And he told me, he said, I love it. He's like, because I'm going to work to come in compliance with this. And I know that I'm losing 40 to 50 of my competitors because they won't do this work. So as with anything, yes, it's an open field. These barriers, sometimes these struggles give you a nice moat from competition.
Really do. Even like this craziness, like this, the number one cause of suspensions or an ASIN is they say inauthentic, which means you got to give them your invoices. And do I like it? No, I don't. But it identifies, it says basically you have to buy from a better distributor. If you're buying from a distributor that's selling you products that are 3 years old and the packaging is yellowed, right? Or their invoices don't give proper information, you know, you should source from someplace better to make sure the consumer is getting what they bargained for. It makes you a better business person. And it also, you're right, it gets rid of the people who can't live up to the level.
All right. So I've got a couple more questions. We're getting short on time here. I want to make sure I get to these questions because we hear them all the time from clients. Let's say I have a buyer. They want to acquire another Amazon business. They're going to do an asset sale. So they're setting up a new co. Now they're running into the situation of having multiple Amazon accounts. What is your opinion on that? We've seen people run multiple Amazon accounts without any problem. Again, are they going to have a problem in the future? Who knows? What's your experience with that?
Okay. We know that we don't know everything. We don't know how they track and how they relate. Related accounts is what you get in the email. You have related accounts and they shut everything down. Basic stuff. You have to have separate computers for each business. You can't just log on. IP switchers are not that great. Separate computers, separate hotspots. We have clients that come in with, you know, a catalog case of six laptops and six Wi-Fi hotspots. Okay. You have to not go on from your phone ever. You can't ever log on from home. You have to make sure if you're allowing the same bookkeeper that they are just as careful as you are, or maybe not use them. Really treat it like entirely separate brick and mortar businesses. And you're losing some of the opportunity costs of having, you know, you have to share costs, but you need to keep it in line. There are hard links like IP addresses, spreadsheets of products, names, addresses, bank accounts, like kind of stuff you'd recognize. There's also been rumors that I believe to be true, where there's also soft connections, like similar email addresses. Like if you're doing business as, you know, CJ, and my email is CJ at Amazon Sellers, it shouldn't be CJ and Amazon Sellers Attorney or CJ and, you know, make them vastly different. Those are soft connections. Your friends on Facebook, there's a belief out there that Amazon is also scraping information, both to identify review manipulation and also related accounts. So you can't have the same people leaving the same reviews, the same products. So those will be soft connections. So you have to really treat it like separate businesses, keep everything entirely separate. And you have to, it has to be like gospel to you. You can't ever screw up. Okay. If you've been using the same MacBook to go onto multiple accounts, take that MacBook, give it to your kids, okay, and go buy two more. Okay. You really have to be that careful. Those are the people that we see that are successfully running separate Amazon accounts. If you're using virtual assistants, don't let them even know that about the different businesses. You have to really separate it and really manage it entirely as separate as you can. And we don't know all the ways that they link accounts. We've been in arbitrations, and a lot of the information I have is from cross-examining them. Amazon, in one particular case, they chose to basically lose the arbitration rather than testify about how they relate accounts. Okay, that's how secret the information is.
Wow.
But the witness said, I'm not answering you. I said, you recognize that your testimony is going to be stricken. Yes. We answered a question. No.
Wow.
So separate as much as possible. There are many people who do it very successfully. My advice is this: risk versus reward. Is the risk of getting caught with related accounts worth the reward of having some diversity? I generally think it is if you're good at it. And also, you'll see pockets in the world like in Brooklyn, New York, a lot of those sellers have multiple accounts. In Shenzhen, China, they have, you know, 50 to 100 accounts. They do it really well. I think it's a worthwhile endeavor if you can be really careful. This diversity has a significant value.
Right, right. Diversity in the world of Amazon in general, I think, is important. Let me ask one last question, and it's really something we could probably talk about on its own entirely. I talked to Scott Scharf about this from Catching Clouds in some detail. How worried should buyers be about sales tax liability issues? And I can tell you, for most sellers we work with, the way it works is, yeah, I started this account in 2013. My accountant told me I didn't have to worry about sales tax liability. 2015, 16 rolled around and I'm like, oh no, what do I do? This seems like it's actually an issue. I don't want to go back. They didn't take advantage of the amnesty program. How worried should a buyer who's taking over an account, both in you know, with Amazon's blessing and without Amazon's blessing, be about that? So asset sale and also stock sale.
It's a significant risk, absolutely significant risk. I actually saw Scott last night. We spoke at the same event in Brooklyn last night. He had flown in to speak about it. It's really a significant risk because, one, you don't know which states are ultimately going to step up. We don't know how Amazon's going to handle it. You know, in the state of Washington, they're now collecting and turning over. In Massachusetts, they just gave all the information and potentially put a lot of sellers at significant risk. You're looking at somewhere between 4 to 8% on every 100,000 of products sold. I mean, it's a significant amount of money you could potentially owe. And even the whole amnesty program was really kind of crazy, because if you participated in it, right, you weren't getting hit with penalties, but now you had this debt and you're going to have this debt going forward. And how are you going to compete against sellers who are not collecting sales tax? You're not going to sell anything. So it's a significant risk. Nobody knows where it's going to go yet. We're in the process of bringing on someone as of counsel, which we're trying to hire, bring on board a tax lawyer, and we could really address these issues. No one knows where it's going yet. The risk is significant, but on the other hand, the opportunity is significant as well. I would recommend, if you're not doing it, you have to have a nest egg put away. This could be a problem, and we don't know whether it's going to be like negotiations with a particular tax person for each seller, or they're just going to start cutting people's legs off across the board. We just don't know yet, but it is certainly something to be concerned about.
For anyone that's listening to this and thinks, man, there's a lot of issues to consider out here, I want to make just a couple points. One, and we've hit this a few times, the opportunity is real, but also the future of e-commerce, like it or not, includes Amazon. The vast majority of online businesses that have an e-commerce component are going to have some presence on Amazon because of just the power that is their marketplace. A lot of these issues are navigable, and you really just have to understand your own risk tolerance levels and what you're going after. And a lot of times the reward, as you've been alluding to, CJ, outweighs the risk. Yeah, you might have the rug pulled out from underneath you, but the money that you're going to make in the meantime could be completely worth it as well. So it really, you know, personal assessment, what are you willing to do on a daily basis? You know, what sort of risk level do you have? It can really determine how you move forward and how you navigate some of these issues. So
agree, 100%. Risk versus reward. This is business. Risk versus reward.
Yeah. Well, hey, CJ, thank you so much for coming on board. I really, really appreciate you taking the time. And if you guys are going to Prosper Show, if we get this out before Prosper Show, but if anyone's going out to Prosper Show, you're going to be there. That's right.
Yep. We're speaking there. Also, could I just do one plug?
Sure, please.
Okay. We all sell on Amazon. We don't actually, no one who works for me is allowed to sell anything. You all sell on Amazon. The reason we do that is because all the information you give us is confidential. But we also all shop on Amazon, okay? Love-hate relationship. We all shop on Amazon. If you're shopping on Amazon, use their Amazon Smiles program. They then donate a small portion to a charity. Please pick the Ty Lewis Campbell Foundation charity. If you don't have one already, it is a close friend of mine, a fraternity brother, and his wife lost a child to brain cancer. And they turned the tragedy into like triumph and hope. And they created this charity where they raise tons of money to find cures for pediatric cancers. So Amazon Smiles, great program. A lot of Amazon stuff is great. Amazon Smiles and the Ty Lewis Campbell Foundation. Ty is T-Y, Ty Lewis Campbell Foundation. It costs you nothing as a buyer, and all the little bits and pieces that Amazon sends in adds up to a lot for the foundation.
Do me a favor, send me a link to the foundation. We'll include it in our show notes on our podcast page. The Smile program is a fantastic program. I use it. We support some local charities here in the Twin Cities area. So if you're not using Smile, it's an easy way to give back from your regular shopping on Amazon. So that's a great tip. Sounds like a great foundation. We'll definitely throw them a link and hopefully get them a little bit of money as well here.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me on. It was terrific.
Thanks again, CJ. We'll be talking soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.